All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio. This is Veterans Radio. And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, a CW-2 helicopter pilot in Vietnam, 1969. Ages ago. Welcome to Veterans Radio. We're so excited to have you here today. We've got some great guests. We've got Senator Gary Peters from Michigan, and we've got author Mike Cirelli, and he's going to be here promoting his book, The Everyday Warrior. Before we get into that, I need to make sure that we thank our sponsors. We can't do Veterans Radio without them. So here we go. Legal Help for Veterans, specializing in veterans' disability claims. Call Legal Help for Veterans at 800-693-4800 or go to their website. That's legalhelpforveterans.com. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, the nation's leading third-party authority for the certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information about NVBDC, you can go to their website, nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information, go to va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. We also want to thank our local veteran service organizations for their longtime support. That's the Irwin Prescott and American Legion Post 46 and the Charles S. Kettles Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310, both here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. So in order to get the program going, we wanted to talk about an event that's coming up. And so I'm going to bring in one of my partners in crime here on Veterans Radio, and that's Tammy Bethune. And Tammy is our social media guru. She helps us do everything. So here we go. Here's Tammy. All right, so we're being joined this morning here on Veterans Radio, or this afternoon, I guess I could say, by our social media expert extraordinaire, and that's Tammy Bethune of BTG Solutions. Tammy runs our website. She does all of our social media for us. And so I wanted to bring Tammy on to talk about an upcoming event that is going on in the local area. So Tammy, what's happening? Coming up here with something to do with hockey, right?
Yes, hockey. Team USA Hockey, which is the National Team Development Program. And its arena is here in Plymouth, Michigan, southeast corner of the state. They have an event. This is the 12th year of this event called Salute to Heroes. And it's an appreciation night for first responders as well as veterans and their families. It's a free event. It is the first weekend of March on the 3rd and the 4th, Friday and Saturday, at their arena, which is located at the corner of M14 and Beck Road. And it's actually coordinated by Region 9 Veterans Community Action Team. And to read their information here, it says, invite all currently serving military members, veterans from all eras, first responders, and their families. And it is always a free event, which includes parking, food, veteran resource fair, fun and free activities for the children, young people, raffles. We'll have special guests that are honored, and of course, a great Team USA hockey game. The doors open at 5:30, and the game starts at 7. So there'll be time between 5:30 and 7 for the attendees to walk around, see what the resource fair offers, for the children to get involved, take pictures. There will be mascots, and find their seats for the 7 o'clock game, which will be Team USA versus Youngstown, both nights.
Okay.
And then it all concludes around 8:30. So
right.
Nice family.
We did this last year, and it was a great event, and many, many veterans showed up for it. And so hopefully we will be out there, and maybe we'll be doing some recording of some stories that we can use on Veterans Radio. So I'm excited to go back there. And it's, as you pointed out, it is a free event, but we still need, or they're requesting that we RSVP, right?
Correct. And that link is on the homepage of Veterans Radio website, which is veteransradio.net.
Okay. And that's the big event coming up. The other secret event that is coming up this year that we are going to be talking about later on is the 20th anniversary of Veterans Radio, which is in November. And so stay tuned, too, because Tammy will be starting to send out information about how you can participate in the anniversary of the 20th year of Veterans Radio, when we're going to have a little program called 20 for 20. And it's going to be a fundraiser that we will be introducing to you at some point in the near future. And also in June or July, I think it is, we are going to be having our 1,000th episode of Veterans Radio, and which to me is overwhelming to think that we have been doing it that long, and that we have been fortunate enough to tell over 1,000 stories. So
you are the champion of storytelling for veterans.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm looking forward to getting that program going in the next couple of weeks. So I just wanted to introduce Tammy to our audience, because you all are getting emails from her and shout outs and everything else. And just wanted to let you know that the voice behind the woman who gets everything done here at Veterans Radio, because we could not.
Well, thanks, Dale. It's a pleasure. It's been a pleasure working with Veterans Radio.
Well, we couldn't do it without you. So, all right. So we're moving right along then. Thanks, Tammy, very much. And we'll be right back after this brief message. And after talking to Tammy, we're going to go into our interview with Senator Gary Peters, who is the junior senator from the state of Michigan. So here we go with the interview with Senator Peters. All right, we're here on Veterans Radio, and we're talking with a junior senator from the state of Michigan, Democrat Gary Peters. Senator, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, great to be with you, Dale. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much. I realize that we're on kind of a short schedule today. It's been very busy here in the state of Michigan, as people will be aware if they read the news. But I wanted to talk to you just briefly about your background, a little bit about the PACT Act, and also a little bit about Selfridge, if we can squeeze all that in.
Yeah, happy to.
All right. So tell me, you were in the Navy Reserves. How'd that come about?
Yeah, I was in the Navy Reserves for a little over 10 years, rose to the rank of a lieutenant commander. I always wanted to have an opportunity to serve my country, and was proud to serve in the Navy.
I think, what did you, you were a CB, correct?
Well, part of my duty was in the CB. So I was a Supply Corps officer in the Navy Reserve, and I had a number of assignments. I was with a combat logistics group, which provided supplies and materiel to the 5th Fleet in the Persian Gulf. I was with a expeditionary fuels unit, but I did serve as a CB battalion for years, and received my CB combat warfare designation and warfare pen as part of my service with the CBs.
Well, I had to ask that because I have a couple of friends that are CBs, and they said to make sure I asked. So, you know, they want to get credit. You know, you guys.
Yes,
know.
Absolutely. No, I enjoyed being with the CB battalion. It was the CB battalion 26, which was actually located at Selfridge Air National Guard Base. So, for a number of years. Unfortunately, it was decommissioned a few years ago, so it no longer exists there at Selfridge, but I was a proud member of that CB battalion and really a highlight of my service.
Well, I think this obviously explains your interest in the PACT Act, and I would like you to just kind of briefly talk about how you helped push that act through the Senate.
Well, the PACT Act is just so important for so many of our veterans, particularly those who have been exposed to toxic substances as a result of their service. We know of our Afghan and Iraqi veterans who were around burn pits, for example, that inhaled toxic substances, and now they're paying the price with their health. The PACT Act is probably the most significant veterans benefits bill to pass in well over a decade, which will help millions of veterans who have been exposed to these toxic substances get the treatment they certainly have earned and deserve from the VA. We've also expanded the areas where Vietnam veterans may have been exposed to Agent Orange. They too will now be able to get treatment with the VA, long overdue. So certainly very pleased. I worked very hard to get that passed with my colleagues. We were able to get it done, and I think it's important for veterans to know now, if you believe you may have been exposed, go to the va.gov website and find out whether or not you qualify for benefits.
Well, I think it's very, very important. I mean, the military has a tendency to send us into areas that where some of the dangers aren't just the enemy. And
right.
So I appreciate all the effort that you put forth with this. And I noticed that you took another advocate, Kevin Hensley. You took him to the State of the Union address.
I did. Yeah. No, Kevin, I'm so happy to have him there. He has been just a tireless advocate for the PACT Act. And he is suffering from exposure, constant exposure that he had while being stationed right next to one of these major burn pits. In fact, it was a burn pit several football fields in size, and he was inhaling this stuff, and he said he was showing symptoms of a physical ailment. He was just told it was a rat crud, not to worry about it, but clearly he needed to worry about it, and unfortunately he's gone through just some really, really tough health medications and treatments, and thank God that he has just been a tireless advocate, thinking of all of his fellow service members, knowing that they're going through similar types of anguish that he is.
Well, I know we here on Veterans Radio always, you know, are trying to encourage our listeners, our veteran listeners, to, you know, if you have been exposed to any of these things, either in Vietnam with the Agent Orange or the burn pits with the, you know, the current conflicts, that, you know, check it out. You know, you've earned the whatever benefits you get, you earned by serving
Absolutely.
The country. And I, you know, do it. That's what they're there for.
Yeah.
And so the last thing, and we're talking here with Senator Gary Peters of Michigan, quickly here, I was reading an article on your website about Selfridge Air National Guard Base, that you're trying to get a new fighter mission station there?
Absolutely. Right now, we have KC-135 tankers that operate out of Selfridge, and then the A-10 Warthog. The A-10s are being phased out of the Air Force. That's an older aircraft, and we need to have newer aircraft to replace the A-10s, and we're going to be fighting to make sure that a fighter mission stays at Selfridge. I've been pushing Secretary Kendall, Secretary of the Air Force, and others to make sure that as that A-10 gets phased out, there is a replacement mission. We'd certainly like to be considered for the F-35. There are F-35 squadrons in the Air National Guard, which Selfridge is just an ideal place for it, and hope that they will be able to get that. Or new variant of an F-15 is also available, but I just think it's absolutely important. And you know, when you think about these recent incursions that we've seen with these objects, an object that was just shot down in Lake Huron, in the northern part of Lake Huron, it shows that having a fighter mission in Michigan along the northern border is critically important for national security and homeland security as well.
I agree. I was going to ask you. I mean, I haven't read anything about what they thought that they shot down, or they haven't found any remains of it yet. Do you know anything? I mean, do you have any secret information about what all these objects are that we're suddenly discovering flying around out there?
Well, I've certainly had a number of conversations throughout this with Department of Defense officials. I've spoken personally with the Secretary of Homeland Security on a few occasions, but actually after this interview, in a couple hours, I will be in a classified briefing specifically on this topic, and I have a lot of questions. We need to have answers, and we're hoping we'll get that in the classified setting.
Well, I would greatly appreciate it if you could, whatever you're able to release, you know, to contact us, and we'll get it out to our audience.
That sounds right.
Thank you very much. I want to thank Senator Gary Peters, junior senator from the state of Michigan, for coming on Veterans Radio today. Good luck, and thank you again. I'd love to talk to you anytime in the future that you have any information that you would like to get out to our audience. We'd be happy to do that for you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Dale. Great to be with you, and I look forward to being on with you again soon.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. That was Senator Gary Peters, junior senator from the state of Michigan, and we're going to take a quick break.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Corporal Dwayne Dewey was the leader of a machine gun squad in Korea when it was overrun. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Carrying their machine guns, Dewey and his men fell back, fighting on exposed ground. Dewey fired his gun so fast he feared the barrel would melt. Seeing that he had only 3 cans of ammunition left, he ran to another machine gun for more. On his way back, a grenade exploded at his feet, knocking him down. Bleeding heavily from thigh to groin, he lay on the ground waiting. A medic knelt over him to remove his blood-soaked pants when another grenade hit the ground beside them. Dewey grabbed it, tucked it underneath him, pulled the medic to the ground yelling, "Hit the dirt, Doc!" The grenade exploded, but the medic was unharmed. Dewey was taken back to an aid station where doctors found that in addition to shrapnel from the grenades, he also had taken a bullet in the stomach. On March 12, 1953, President Eisenhower presented him the Medal of Honor saying, "You must have a body of steel."
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit veteranscrisisline.net. veteranscrisisline.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
Okay, here we are. We're coming back here on Veterans Radio. My guest today is Michael Cirelli. He has written a book titled The Everyday Warrior, The No-Hack Practical Approach to Life. Quick background about Mike is that he served 20 years as a recon Marine, a scout sniper, a U.S. Navy SEAL officer, 10 combat deployments, which is unbelievable to me and to my generation. He turned his attention to using the lessons he learned in the battlefield to help business develop strong leaders. So we're going to go from there. So, Mike, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Dale, thank you for having Matt and having me. And let me qualify that, because when you say recon Marine, scout sniper, and a Navy SEAL officer, it makes me sound like a phony. But I started as an enlisted Marine, recon Marine, scout sniper, and then eventually I switched over to the SEAL teams as an officer. So it was split service, but 20 years total.
That's a lot of time. I spent 3 years, 7 months, and 2 days, but who counted at the time?
So did some World War II vets, and guess what? They did more in 6 months than I did in my 20 years. And you can't choose your timing. That's for damn sure.
That's true. I think everybody, warriors are warriors no matter where they are. So the idea here is I wanted to talk about this book and about how you've translated or transferred your experiences in the military into the everyday world, and how you've been helping businesses, kind of changing their culture and so forth, and how they can be much more effective. So let's start there. So what do you think that you bring from the military to the business world?
Everything. I'm about to head to North Carolina to give a speech tomorrow to about 300 people. And I start every speech with this: if I've seen further, it's because I've stood on the shoulders of giants. And as we talk about this book, The Everyday Warrior, this is not my autobiography. I will never write one of those. It would be a short story. But I served alongside what I consider to be some of the highest performers, which were the most lethal warriors in the world, at the Joint Special Operations Command. And they're not what people believe, because there are some veterans out there with a microphone that play to the lowest common denominator, like they're a meathead and all they did was kill. Yes, our job entailed sometimes killing the enemy, but our job was to win. If it required killing the enemy, that's what we did. If we could maneuver around the enemy and still win without a shot fired, that's victory in my eyes, and everyone comes home. But these warriors were they were kind, they were empathetic, they were respectful, they were highly intelligent. They didn't act like some of the guys we often see on social media acting like tough guys. So when I got out, first off, I needed time to reflect on my service and truly sort of process what I had learned. We were on a pretty much nonstop deployment cycle during my entire time in the SEAL teams, for which I deployed 11 times across those 15 years. And I also got my MBA at the University of Texas. And that was when I first started seeing, hey, ultimately the skill sets can be different from finance and accounting to military decision-making process and planning, but the principles of leadership and the code by which great leaders live is the same. In the book, I talk about anyone has the potential to be a warrior. I call them warriors within their respective professions. I mean, Bruce Lee said a warrior is an average man with laser-like focus. In the military, you either fall into two buckets for me, and you can actually have a foot in both, and that's what you want to aim for. They're not mutually exclusive. There are warfighters, and there are warriors. And warfighters are trained in the art of war, but it doesn't necessarily mean they have the right mindset, the right character, the right ethics and integrity. And there were a lot of warfighters in the military that, in my opinion, it's my opinion, were not warriors. And it, you know, I don't want to pass judgment because I can't say I was a warrior either. That's for other people to decide. But as I started with organizational leadership and I wrote the book, The Talent War, How Special Operations and Great Organizations Win on Talent, I naturally focused on performance on the organizational level, leadership, organizational leadership, and organizational culture. And eventually giving all these speeches, and that's where I'm on the road giving 1 to 2 speeches a week usually, people would come in and say, hey, I'd be more interested in how this applies to me individually. How do I become a better person? How do I become a better individual? And that's when I said, you know what? I completely, it's either I'm not that smart, which that's probably the former, or I just completely missed it. But, you know, you want each person within your organization, regardless of what you do, to be the best version of themselves. Because if you attain that on a mass level, the aggregate level of performance for the organization is much higher. It, you know, 1 + 1 can equal 3 when you've poured into each individual and again, made them the best version of themselves. But what I wanted to do with this was separate platitudes and mythology from reality. And when I say platitudes, there's a lot of people out there. Social media has good. It also has the bad of putting out just platitudes like grind every day, give 110%. I don't like things like that. I can't give 110%. I'll pass out or I'll die. I can't grind every day because if I'm grinding every day, I'm not stepping back after a failure or even a success and saying, what did I learn from that? What did I do well? Let's do more of that. But more importantly, what did I do poorly or what can I do better? And let's put some countermeasures in place to correct that and continue evolving. So that's why the Everyday Warrior, we call it a no-hack practical approach to life. It is a long process. And we have a society right now looking for shortcuts and hacks. Shortcuts and hacks at best waste time. At worst, instill these bad habits. My life, I've never attained anything quickly, and I don't try to anymore. I take more enjoyment in the journey, and that sounds like a platitude, but I take more enjoyment from the journey than I do the destination. And let me give you an example. We just completed 4 world records doing something called the 777 expedition that's never been done. 7 continents, 7 skydives, 7 days. And it took us 18 months, 9 special operations soldiers, actually 7 special operations soldiers and 1 Marine Scout sniper and 1 former Vietnam from the Vietnam or 1 Marine from the Vietnam era. And over 18 months, it was a grind. We doubted ourselves at time, but these guys pulled it off. We did 7 continents, 7 skydives in 6 days, 6 hours and 6 minutes. And we set 4 world records. You know, when we finished, yeah, I was so happy to have finished, but it didn't provide me the enjoyment, the fulfillment I thought it would. And I keep looking back and I'm like, but I remember that time with all the guys when we hit that obstacle and we came together and we didn't necessarily agree, but we were all aligned to the mission. We overcame that obstacle. And that's where that enjoyment comes from, is what I learned along the way. And I found that even with major military operations that we pulled off, we'd come back. And of course, yeah, there's that moment of, yeah, we did it. But then it's almost like, what's next? On to the next thing. What's the, as we say in the military, what's the next ridgeline? Right. And I get over victories very quickly. I probably don't get over failures as quickly. And I don't think I should, but it's always, we accomplished it. Now we're moving on. I celebrate victories very quickly, and I ask myself, what's next?
Well, I mean, I think that's a great philosophy to have. You know, when we're talking about our military experiences, you know, the successful missions are always great, as you pointed out. And, you know, you come back and you're elated and all that other stuff. And then the operations person comes down and says, you know, great job. And then, okay, here's tomorrow's assignment. And,
yep.
You know, you've got to move on and put that aside. And if you've screwed up that mission, for whatever occurred, that's where the biggest lessons come into play, I think. And I think that that's one of the things that your book points out to, is that you can't be afraid of failure, because everybody's going to fail, and everybody does at some point in their lives. And it's just a matter of, you know, the degree, I guess you could call it, of failure. But I know that, you know, as a Medal of Honor recipient, Sammy Davis, and he talks about, his book was about, you know, you're not a failure, you know, if you fail, until you don't get up again and try again. And, you know, if you get knocked down, just keep getting up and keep going. And I think that's kind of the message that I was reading in the book. You know, we're talking with Mike Cirelli here, and the book is titled The Everyday Warrior. So when we look back at that, Mike, and when you got out of the service after 20 years, how did you decide to go into business? You know, what did you see that was missing? I guess that would be the question.
Let me answer that question this way. Well, I knew I wasn't going to go into the federal sector. I wasn't going to carry a gun anymore. If I couldn't do it at JSOC, I don't want to do it at all. Because I was so impressed with how they run operations and the level of leadership. I did try a quick stint at the Texas A&M University system as executive director of veteran services, with the hopes of becoming a vice chancellor. But I found out very quickly that higher education was not the domain where I was going to be successful. So I knew I was going to be in business. It was, I think the better question was, what business was I going to be in? And for me, let me say, it was a process of elimination, and I'm still going through it. I've tried a lot of things. I've started a couple of businesses, some by all, you know, accounts, a failure by textbook definition, but I think for most veterans getting out, you think you have an idea of what you want to do. And I would say, hey guys, it's a process of elimination. The job you take directly out of the military, statistically, and we talk about this in the talent war, is not going to be the job you're sitting in 5-10 years from when you take that position. So don't worry about it. Don't try to rush the process, which I see a lot of veterans doing. And Dale, you talked about failure. First off, failure is not an indictment on anyone's character, unless you didn't care, you didn't truly give it, you know, your best effort, or your optimal effort. But here's a great case example from the military of what failure can catapult you to become. And the most recognizable, counterterrorism unit in the world is Delta Force. And if you look at their history, their first major operation was a complete and utter failure. And I had the opportunity to interview General Jerry Boykin, who I think the world of, phenomenal leader. And that was Operation Eagle Claw. And we all know it, the Desert One site, a C-17 collided with, I believe it was CH-53, and 8 Americans were killed, and they had to abort the hostage rescue attempt for the Iranian hostages.
Right.
I know, talking to General Boykin, that devastated their guys. But what did they do? One, there was a major investigation that was launched, which then led to the formation of the Joint Special Operations Command. Charlie Beckwith was pivotal in that process. But, you know, that was a watershed moment in special operations. We learned so much that even my generation stepping into the global war on terror benefited from the previous generations with all these failures. Your failures write the SOPs for the next generation. But, you know, Delta went through the after-action review process. They learned. They've probably failed 1,000 times since, but now they're the most noticeable, lethal, and one of the most effective counterterrorism units in the world. Nobody would ever debate that. But They didn't hide from their failure. They recognized it. They acknowledged it. They processed it. They reflected. They learned. And then they stepped back into the arena. And so when you talk about failure, Operation Eagle Claw is the finest show of what failure can, how it can start the process to excellence. And there is a little story about, when they returned to Oman, where they staged out of, some British contractors ran that airfield and put two and two together that when they returned, it was those Yanks that just tried to rescue the hostages in Iran. And I don't know if you've heard the story. They brought over a case of beer, but the Delta guys weren't there. They were probably already in an after action review discussing what happened. And on it, they left a note from all of us to all of you for having the guts to try. And that piece of cardboard still hangs in a special operations unit, but for having the guts to try. When you take risk, you are going to fall. Make sure it's calculated risk and you've done everything to buy down risk and set yourself up for success. But when it happens, sometimes some people go into the field position. That's fine. Don't stay there too long and just go through that after action review process that I talk about in the book, that it is the military's most lethal weapon with regards to both individual and organizational development. We do an after action review or a hot wash or a debrief after every training evolution and after every combat mission. And that's how we learn. That's how we evolve. And I'm surprised how the private sector doesn't do this. And I'm not the first to come out of the military and talk about the power of the after action review. It just falls deaf on certain private sector leaders who are just fixed minded.
Well, yeah, I was just thinking about that as you were talking about all of the different jobs. And a lot of them were jobs, as you pointed out. You know, when you first get out of the military, don't take your first, the first job is not going to be your career. It's not going to be your passion. It's not going to be your end all and so forth. And, many times I have found that people in the military have difficulty with authority. And it's not that they don't listen to their superior officers or their, the sergeants who run the whole show. But in civilian life, you don't necessarily run into that. There's not a really good, explanation or comparison with middle management. So sometimes you have a person that's at the top of the company and they want to make the company in their own image. Sometimes you run into people that are not real happy with that image. And so you don't get the cooperation. I think that the employees don't understand what the mission is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that I pulled out of your book was always to make sure that you know what that mission is so that you
know what success looks like.
Yeah.
Yes.
What is it going to look like? It's like visualizing this is what it's going to be like. And what steps do I have to take to get to that point?
First off, there was exceptional leadership in the military. There was also leadership in the military that I was horrified was allowed to stay in their position and continue to promote. I always say the best and the worst leadership I've ever seen is in the military. I've seen some exceptional leaders in the private sector, both men and women, where I'm like, damn, I wish you'd put on a uniform at one point because that would have worked for you in a heartbeat. And I've learned a lot from private sector leaders who never served. And I highly respect anyone, whether they served or not, if they're an exceptional leader. Rich Deviney is another Navy SEAL, a good friend of mine. He wrote the book, The Attributes. And actually he, myself, a guy named Andy Stumpf, who has a massive podcast called The Clear It Hot Podcast, a retired SEAL. And then Ray CZ Cologne, who's the actual SEAC right now, the senior enlisted advisor to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. So the senior E9, we're going to be writing a book about leadership and culture. It's called The Irony of Leadership. And as you talk about people trying to form an organization in their image, it's not about you. It's not about me. It's about we and the mission. And, that is pure narcissism and ego when you try to form a company into your image. It was Willie Nelson who said, let people be people. It's their greatest strength. And if that's different than me, that's fine. As long as they know what success looks like, they're aligned to the outcomes. They're aligned to the mission and they know their roles and responsibilities and what falls in their buckets. And lastly, they're a team player. They can put their self needs aside for the needs of the organization. When the organization wins, usually all the people within that organization win as well. So, you know, another thing, if I'm going to look at the challenges of why sometimes private sector leaders are not set up for success, I use an MBA program as an example. So I'm a lieutenant commander, 19 years going through an MBA program at the University of Texas. I'm 39 years old amongst a bunch of 27-year-olds, all of who are smarter than me. Let's just say we pulled some strings to get me into UT because the GMAT score was not high. The brain had taken some hits. But MBA programs in business schools turn out very good business practitioners, much like the School of Infantry turns out warfighters, but they do not turn out leaders. And I remember a dean saying, you know, here at McCombs, we produce the business leaders of tomorrow. And, you know, he probably didn't like a student and he didn't recognize my experience saying, hey, sir, I'd actually challenge you on that one. These kids are in, not kids, but these young men and women are in classes with regards to technical and tactical skills. They're not receiving leadership development training. There's no formal curriculum or informal curriculum that I've seen within the school. And I know a lot of MBA programs are standing up centers of leadership, but it'll never be the focus. And if you think, and I'm not saying I'm a leader to emulate, but if I look back on the process, you know, it took me 20 years of coaching and mentorship by great leaders to get where I'm at. That didn't happen overnight. And so I have a lot of respect for business leaders that go out and start companies, and they've just never had great mentors, or they've never been through a leadership development pipeline. The military is the world's greatest leadership development school. It is. Even Inc. magazine at one time said Marine OCS was the finest business management school in the world. It's what we do. It's baked into the culture of you're always developing the leaders below you. Mm-hmm. Actually developing the leaders to a point that they are better than you, so that when you leave that organization, the irony, they take the organization to the next level without you. And that means putting your ego aside and not forming or trying to mold the company in your image, molding the company to meet the needs or the asymmetric challenges they're going to face 5 years from now.
We're talking with Mike Cirelli here, and the book that we're kind of focusing on today is The Everyday Warrior. And it talks about a no-hack practical approach to life. And there are many things inside of this book that I would, you know, that we just don't have time to go through them all. I was looking at one chapter that I was looking at was chapter 6, which is the doing, talking, set an intention, plan, act, reflect, and repeat, which caught my eye. And, the quote in each chapter starts off with, it has a little quote there by someone most of us would recognize at some point. And this one was from Tony Robbins, who most of our audience will know is a pretty well-known motivational speaker. And he says,
yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's known by a few people. Anyway, he says, if you talk about it, it's a dream. If you envision it, it's possible. But if you schedule it, it's real. And I thought that was really important. And that stuck with me because I've been doing this radio program for 20 years, and it started off as a dream. And, you know, then we envisioned it, and then it actually happened. And now I'm at the point where I'm learning, as you said, every day is a learning experience for all of us. We're saying, okay, now this is what I have to do to take the next step. And so could you talk about that process a little bit of taking the dream? For all of our veterans out there, you mentioned in the book, you're talking about whether you start your own business or you invest in a franchise, or you go to work for somebody that you admire. And how do you get there?
Yeah. So the doing greater sign talking is a logo that I saw all throughout the military, from my time in the Marines to in the SEALs to even on bases overseas. We put a precedence on action in behaviors, because actions are reflectors of your behaviors than just running your mouth. And again, social media has both good components and it has bad components. What I think one of the bad is people are just allowed to run their mouths nonstop, sometimes without credibility whatsoever or reliability. So it's easy to set an intention, and a lot of people do this daily, if not hourly. That part's easy. But actually stepping into the arena is where people fail. Is I want you to dream. I want you to dare greatly. But then take that dream, even if it's an audacious, daring dream, and lay out a realistic plan. If it's, I want to start my own business, yet I don't have the the personal income to fund it. So I've got to hold this job. Then I'm going to hold this job for 5 years and I'm going to continue working on my company. One, I'm going to reverse. One of the things we use in the military was reverse planning. So if it's 5 years, I'm leaving this job and fully focused on my business to where I know I've saved enough money. I've got some ramp to run the business and maybe I've started to generate revenue for that business. I reverse engineer that from the 5 years all the way down to today. And today may be forming the LLC, or today may be like, let's sketch out what I'm doing. Am I selling a product? Am I providing a service? Let's define that and go through that process of identifying what success is. And you know that every business plan iterates probably 1,000 times before you end up knowing who you are as an organization and what you do, the value you provide to customers. But that reverse planning, one, identifying the intention, reverse planning to create realistic timelines and milestones, and then actually taking action and not giving up on your dream. So many people, when they don't see and this goes to instant gratification, which is a problem right now within our society, especially with the advent of technology. Again, I'm not bashing technology. It's great if used properly. But if people don't see instant results, what do? They quit. I always use this example, fitness, because it's the one thing that nobody can buy. It has to be earned. And it requires consistency in both diet and your workout regimen. But I see so many people that are just not happy with their bodies, and that's fine. I'm sort of there right now because I had a hip replacement 2 years ago and things just haven't feel healed the same, but I'm putting an action plan in place. But they say, hey, tomorrow I'm going to start working out. I'm going to start eating clean. And then when they don't see results by Friday, what do? Saturday morning, they're back to their same eating habits. They're not working out. And it just, you have to understand that journey is long. That journey is long and it's worth it. Hard choices. And I hate I hate platitudes, hard choices, but these, some platitudes are platitudes because they're true. Hard choices, meaning demonstrating self accountability and self discipline, leads to an easy life down the road, or at least an exceptional life that people would want to read about. People opting for the path of least resistance, the easy choices, leads to a very hard life that nobody wants to read about or hear about, because you never did anything that challenged you or pushed you outside your mental and physical comfort zones.
Yeah, we all aren't lucky enough to get the winning lottery ticket. And no. Everything takes a long time.
Do you play the lottery?
At $460 billion, whatever it was, I said, well, maybe, you never know. I think
we're thinking, yeah. When it's that high, you go buy a ticket and you say, hey, yeah, what the hell? But
I go to
a 7-Eleven near my house and I see the same people buying lotto tickets and lottery tickets.
I know.
It was just never me. And maybe it's something my mom and dad instilled, but they're like, just stay the course. I'm not leaving my life to probabilities. I'm not in odds. I think that's your acquiescing control over your life. I know what I can control. I know what I can't now, especially as I get older, and letting some things go. But I like to remain in control of my outcomes and the path to achieve those outcomes.
You mentioned in the book, you talk about ATTA, the ATTA. Could you talk about, for those of you that are not, can't see it on radio, but he's got a sign behind him that says one step at a time.
One step at a time. Andy Stumpf, again, the retired Navy SEAL, Cleared Hot Podcast. Go check it out. This guy is, this shows he was enlisted his entire career. He became a officer at the very end, the tail end. But it shows you how smart, and I was an officer, how smart the guys were that I worked with, smarter than me. Andy will run circles around me from logic and clear thinking to just his articulation on subjects. And that's why he's so phenomenal. But, he said it to me. He's like, how do you build a business, Mike? And I'm one brick at a time. He's like, bam, how do you climb a mountain? One step at a time. And so we preach that. Stop looking for the shortcuts. Stop looking for the hacks. Set the intention, create the plan, and take it one step at a time. Now, not every step is going to be forward. Some are to the left, to the right, sometimes back. But if after 2 years you stayed the course, I guarantee you will look back and maybe you haven't even achieved your outcome yet, but you will smile how far you've come. And that's part of the reflection as I look past my career. I started out as a private in the Marine Corps and I ended up as a lieutenant commander with 20 years at the highest tactical level in JSOC. And I'm going to tell you, like, that was humbling. I probably didn't belong at JSOC. Somehow I fooled them to allow me past the assessment and selection process. But man, I served alongside some exceptional men and women. And I look back on that journey now and I'm humbled. And it does make me smile because there were millions of failures along the way. And I laugh at some of the boneheaded moves I did. But that one step at a time, and we turned ATA into a leadership apparel brand, which we're relaunching here in the next month or two with Andy Stump, the SEAL, Nick Cush, who's a Navy EOD guy, and then George Silva, who was a Navy corpsman as well.
Well, and you mentioned also these three parts of the everyday warrior, the physical, the mental, and the spiritual parts. Could we talk about that? Reminding the audience, we're talking with Mike Cirelli here. The book we're talking about today is The Everyday Warrior. He's written other ones, but we'll get into that before we let him go today.
Yeah, and you know, I always caution when I speak about this is I don't consider myself a subject matter expert on anything, and I'm still very much working on these pillars. And these pillars, you know, you can always usually prioritize a few things in your life. And if you prioritize your physical fitness, sometimes – this actually happened to me. I was in the best physical shape of my life, on my last few deployments, but I was spiritually bereft. So physical fitness is one pillar. Need that say, you know, it is usually the foundation for your mental and spiritual fitness as well. And we call them fitness, physical fitness, mental fitness, and spiritual fitness, because mental, health and spiritual health are like a muscle. If you put the time in, if you put them under tension and allow them to then rest and reflect, you will grow like a muscle in those areas as well. But we often overlook it, and we provide in the book, like, hey, here are little ways to build your mental fitness by simply putting in 2 or 3 minutes at a couple places in the day to write, to journal, which the highest performing guys I've ever met were always journaling about what they learned and things they could do better. And then spiritual as well is, you know, one of the things I advocate and I try to do myself is to shut that phone off on the weekends from social media, not even get on, and focus on my family and focus on myself and my friends and really get out, hopefully, and actually jump out of an airplane. I love skydiving. I'm not good at it, but I love it. Or going on a hike with a wife in nature and just being able to breathe and work on both my mental and spiritual fitness over the weekends. But some people just get caught, and I'm not placing any blame whatsoever. They get caught in the grind of the American life, just working and not paying attention to themselves. They're getting out of shape, and they're also losing fitness within their mental health and spiritual health as well.
I think it's important that we all try to do that, you know, and turn off these outside influences that can distract you from your life. Because, you know, how many people have we heard of? And, you know, I'm a little bit older than you, probably a lot older than you.
But 3-4 years?
At least.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking of the people that we, you know, that ran their business, you know, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And, you know, and then they, you know, they kick over at 50 years old. And or they, you know, and they never get to enjoy the fruits of all that labor that they put in there. And so I think that those three pillars are really important, because if you don't do the physical part, the mental part, or the spiritual part, I think you're going to leave this world a little early.
Yeah, you know, don't get me wrong. You have my undying respect for the fact that you grinded to build that business, and the lack of balance that happens to us. It's happened to me. But you know, a lot of people put precedence on one of their priorities is money. And that's fine. If that's your priority, if that's how you define success, only you can determine that for yourself. But if you become a multimillionaire and you're overweight, you're on your fourth marriage, and you really don't have a strong tribe. And by tribe, I mean somebody who will be there through thick and thin. Who would wake up at 3 a.m. to drive over to your house and help you. Without question. And if you end up in that position, then was it really worth it? So, you know, money is great, but I say the greatest currency in life is impact. Cause that's an annuity that keeps paying forward. That has compounding interest on it. Cause when you're gone, You've got people that you impacted that are then impacting others, telling about, let me tell you about Michael Mansour, who won the Medal of Honor and saved three SEALs by showing selflessness. That story is going to go for ages. Mm-hmm. As long as the U.S. is around, the U.S. military around, people are going to be telling stories about Michael Mansour. And that's going to go long, long after I'm off this earth. I'd rather be known for that than having a whole lot of money and, my character in question.
Well, I think so. As we come to the end of our little interview, you've mentioned a whole bunch of different things there. Tell me a little bit about this talent war group that you've started up. I thought that was really fascinating.
Yeah. So we initially started as I started a foundation called Vetted Foundation with the help of General Tony Kukulo, Admiral Bobby Emin, Admiral McCraven helped a little. And it was basically, we designed a mini MBA course for senior veterans, both enlisted and officers, to get the financial acumen they lacked. It failed, partially due to politics in the state of Texas, which I just didn't know the battleground. And that's on me. No, I'm not placing blame on people who I thought were obstacles to it. I should have known better. I should have known all the personalities on the battlefield. But from that, I started Talent War Group. We're an executive search firm placing, again, senior and middle-level leaders into small to medium-sized businesses, and we're still doing that. And usually in general management positions, so there's some high requirements. But then we turned into the leadership development arm as well. And so leadership development is my passion. My co-author of the Talent War Group and Carly Walden run the executive search. They've have over 80,000 hires between the two of them. The leadership development, I love coming into companies and helping them walk out of that meeting with a few things they can work on and improving the overall culture so that everyone is aligned, may not necessarily agree, but they understand it's about the company. It's not about them. And if everyone has that mentality, the team mentality, if they contribute, it's a better environment for everyone to work. You become more effective. You become more efficient. Relationships improve. And so that's why I love the leadership development that we do. We work with a number of other companies, Legacy Expeditions. We pair with them, which technically Andy and I own that, to do the experiential leadership development. That is where we take senior leadership teams or mid-level management teams into the wild, where we put them through a few days in the wild to reinforce the team building and build shared adversity amongst those leaders. And then guys like Rich Deviney, The Attributes, again, also a SEAL with a consulting firm.
So I'm just looking at the back of the book. The book is entitled The Everyday Warrior by Mike Cirelli, along with Brian Gordon, George Silva, who we heard about, Jason Boulay. You wrote The Talent War, Special Units and Great Organizations Win on Talent. You're keeping yourself busy, which is good.
The wife is giving me some warning orders that things need to get a little steady. So it's funny, as I preach about balance, I'm probably one of the most unbalanced stages of my life. I'm willing to give for the next few years to hopefully reach a steady state. But Dale, I'm also starting to in reflecting back, there is harmony in chaos amongst a team and dissent amongst the team. You're never going to get it to where we all envision this culture that we can build. You're never going to get there. But there's certain things I'm willing to forego just to make sure that the team, whether they like each other or not, are moving or rowing in the same direction towards success. And so that's why, culture's never one and done. That thing is always at risk for the wheels getting a little loose and falling off. And that's for the business leaders listening, that's okay. You break out the wrench, you tighten them, and then you get that car moving in the right direction again.
And you just keep moving forward. That's all all you can do. So if I wanted to get more information, or my audience wanted to get more information, where would you suggest they go to find out more about not just Michael Cirelli, but also all these other different organizations involved?
I say F my life because I thought I would never have a personal website. And now I do. It's MikeCirelli.com, and it's got the link to all the things we just talked about. When my team convinced me I needed that, it was a low point in my life. I no longer feel like a quiet professional or a silent professional. MikeSorelli.com. You can find, if you have anything, if you have any questions, there's also, you can contact us through there, and we're pretty responsive.
Okay. The last thing I wanted to talk about briefly, and I can't find the name of it now, is that you are involved in the nonprofit that provides education for Medal of Honor recipients, children's and warriors who have died in combat.
Oh, yeah. So this book, The Everyday Warrior, it says 25% of profits go to the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. And in chapter one, that says for year one, that's going to be in perpetuity. Additionally, we added another 25% goes to Folds of Honor. They have very similar missions in providing educational scholarships to spouses and children of the fallen or highly disabled veterans who have fallen on a tough time and need assistance with their kids' education. So 50% of the book's profits will go to those two foundations for the life of the book. And even with ADA, 10% of our profits on all sales of all the t-shirts, hats, and everything else go to a couple organizations. That's dear to Nick Cush, Navy EOD, Andy Stumpf, retired SEAL, who are my partners, and George Silva. We are going to give back where we can, but it's going to be to organizations that actually put the precedence or the large majority of the money towards their actual programs. Yeah, so we vet the foundations that we work with.
All right. Well, Michael Sorelli, thank you very, very much for being on Veterans Radio, and hopefully we can talk again with you in the future.
Dale, I'd love to, and thank you for what you do in representing vets. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed today's Veterans Radio, and will join us again next week with our benefits program. So if you have any questions for our experts, you can send me an email. That's dale@veteransradio.net, or you can just go to our website, veteransradio.net, and click on the contact button, and we will get your question, and we'll get it answered for you next week. So until then, this is Dale Thornberry. For all of us here at Veterans Radio, you are dismissed.